everyone, and welcome to Fact Talk. Fact Talk is a podcast hosted by Old Dominion University's Center for Faculty Development. It is a learning space where our faculty can talk about and highlight their current research and various projects. So let's tune in.
So hello, Dr. Cassie Glenn. I want to thank you for agreeing to be the first faculty member at Old Dominion University to agree to talk with us about your research and all of the wonderful things you are currently working on. So before we begin to highlight and dig into your current research and projects, can you briefly introduce yourself and talk about who or what inspires your research?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Tamika. This is a great opportunity. So I am an assistant professor of psychology here at Old Dominion University. I'm a clinical psychologist by training. And my areas of research broadly are in understanding the development of self-injury and suicide risk among young people. I study children, adolescents, and young adults, college-age adults. The question about what inspires my research is a great one. I feel like it is a big question, as my inspirations, I think, have evolved over time. I would say that at this point, in terms of the work that we're doing, a lot of my inspiration comes from the teens and the families that we work with. We spend a lot of time trying to develop research studies that we feel like are going to enhance our ability to understand what increases young people's risk, how we might better support them and help to improve their mental health and well-being. And so I get a lot of inspiration from the folks that we work with in that space, as well as our clinical partners who are really on the ground each day trying to support youth and families.
Thank you. Thank you. And I just want to say, I definitely want to thank you and appreciate you for the work that you are doing. So with that being said, I know that you are the director of the Youth Risk and Resilience Lab at Old Dominion University. So can you talk to us about that? Why was the lab created, or the purpose of it? Where is it located? Some key players, research, as well as some current projects.
Sure, absolutely. The lab was created during my first faculty position in 2015, when I started at the University of Rochester. And the lab has since transitioned to Old Dominion University, where I started in January of 2020. The lab is located on the third floor of the Mills Godwin Building on the ODU campus. The lab, in terms of the key players at ODU, I have some full-time staff members, I have some wonderful doctoral students and master students and undergraduate research assistants, and those are sort of the folks that are in the lab day to day. But the lab, in terms of the research, really spans beyond just the research that's happening on campus. So as I think we'll chat about during our time today, a number of our research projects are in collaboration with Children's Hospital of the King's Daughters, CHKD. So our lab sort of spans into some of those spaces as well. I still have some graduate students at the University of Rochester who are doing some exciting work in this area. And I think a big focus of our lab is collaboration. So not just with clinical partners like CHKD, but a number of our studies are also multi-site. We're starting up a pretty large scale project right now with partners at Rutgers in New Jersey and Mass General Hospital in Boston. And I know we'll be talking a little bit about that project today. That's one of our major projects that's really interested in understanding high risk adolescents and understanding factors that may predict risk over the short term. What are the factors that may indicate that a young person is at risk in the next hours and days? So that's sort of one major arm of our research. A second major arm is, once we can better understand factors that increase risk, can we intervene on those factors? to decrease risk for young people. And we actually have a project that will be starting up soon where we're looking to provide an intervention or a treatment for sleep problems, particularly insomnia, which we know is related to suicide risk, to see if by treating insomnia, we can reduce suicide risk and rehospitalization among young people. So I would say that's sort of the second arm of the lab. And then the third arm of the lab extends even beyond that to the prevention space in terms of the kind of work that we're doing. We're really excited about some collaborations that we're starting up with a couple of what are called teen-to-teen crisis lines. So most folks are familiar with perhaps the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline or Crisis Text Line, for instance, these types of crisis resources right. that can be used. But there's a few teen-to-teen crisis lines staffed by teenagers for teenagers. And we're working with Teen Line in Los Angeles and Youth Line in Portland, Oregon, to better understand the teens' experience who are volunteering in this space, as well as then starting to look at the effectiveness of these types of crisis resources. So I would say that's a third major arm of the research right now.
Wow, that's powerful. Okay. So in discussing as far as your, I know you sort of, you talked about as far as your current projects, can you talk to us about your recently funded grant with CHKD?
Absolutely, absolutely. So this is going to be a multi-site project across the three sites that I mentioned. So ODU is going to be one of the sites, then Rutgers in New Jersey, Mass General Hospital in Boston. And across those three sites over the next 4 years, we're going to be recruiting 200 teenagers at each site, 600 total across the three sites, and their parents, to better understand how social stress increases suicide risk for young people. And we're particularly interested in understanding high risk periods. So you can think about if we have a provider, let's say we have a school counselor or a teacher or even a therapist who's very concerned about a young person. One thing that they really are tasked with understanding is this young person I'm seeing, is this teenager at risk in the next hours or days so that they can make an informed decision about how to keep them safe. Prior research has been really helpful to tell us factors that may increase risk for suicide among young people, but a lot of these studies have followed people up over at best months, but in most cases years, to look at how factors increase risk. And that is less useful clinically when we're trying to make decisions about whether somebody's at risk, you know, sort of right now in the immediate, is this person at imminent risk? And in order to answer those sort of key questions about warning signs, is this person at risk right now? We need to measure people. We need to ask them questions. We need to get information from them repeatedly over short intervals to see how these factors relate to increases and decreases in risk over time. So this particular study is interested in social stress because we know that relationship stress, whether it's peers, family, romantic partners, is related to increased risk for suicide among young people, but among adults as well. But we don't have a great sense of how those types of stressors increase risk. So what is it about certain types of social stressors that may create increased risk for suicide, and why are those factors increasing risk? And so this particular study is interested in answering some of those questions. And the way that we're going to do that is we're recruiting teens who have been seen in the hospital, whether that's the emergency department or an inpatient treatment facility for suicide risk. And we're going to follow them for a month after they leave the hospital. And we're going to ask them questions multiple times a day about how they're thinking and feeling and behaviors that they might be engaging in, as well as asking them to wear a wrist-worn sensor, like a Fitbit, to measure their sleep during this time period as well.
Gotcha. So with this study, this study actually informed your paper.
Yes.
Right. So and I know you talked about, because actually you did a great job with just segueing into it. But can you give us the title of your paper that was recently published and continue to, you know, walk us through this paper and, you know, even provide just a brief reflection, just reflecting on the process and would you have done anything differently?
Sure, absolutely. The title's a little bit long, but bear with me. So the article that was recently published is Sleep Problems Predict Next Day Suicidal Thinking Among Adolescents, a multimodal real-time monitoring study following discharge from acute psychiatric care. So that's a mouthful. But in short, what we were interested in is understanding how sleep problems over a very short time period may increase suicidal thoughts among this high-risk sample of adolescents after they've been discharged from the hospital. And the real-time monitoring piece comes in because we are looking to measure these factors of interest, not in the lab, but out in teens' natural environment. So again, by sort of what I described before, having them answer questions on their phone, having them wear these wrist-worn sensors. These are the types of factors that we can measure in their natural environment.
Gotcha.
And so what we found in that study is consistent with what people have found over longer time periods when they've measured these things. So prior studies perhaps have found that if we know that someone has sleep problems at a later point, they may have an increase in suicidal thoughts or they may be at higher risk for engaging in suicidal behavior. And what we found is the relationship actually between these two things is on the order of days. So if we measure a teenager's sleep, asking them questions about, for instance, how long it took them to fall asleep, did they have any nightmares when they were having trouble falling asleep? Were they sort of ruminating about mistakes that they had made or things that had not gone well that day? These types of factors actually predicted whether they would have greater suicidal thoughts. So an increase in their suicidal thinking that next day. So on the order of days, we found this very closely linked relationship that sleep problems were directly related to this increase in suicidal thoughts.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you for that. Yeah. Would you have done anything differently?
Oh, that's a great question. And I think with every study, there are absolutely areas for improvement. I think what was nice about this project is this was really the first study to be able to implement this type of design with this population. Right. One thing that I will note in the research that we do that I think informs the question you just asked is we, at the end of the study, we'll have an interview with teens, a brief interview where we'll just ask them questions about what it was like to be in the study. So what questions did they like, or what aspects of the study did they like? What aspects of the study didn't they like? And what are some things that we could do differently? And over time, we got great feedback from teens about ways that we could make the study more helpful for them, or just to make it easier to complete the surveys over that period of time. In terms of things I think we might have done differently. I think there's always ways that we could improve the length of the surveys that we're sending. So we aim to create surveys that are very brief. So if we're asking people things multiple times a day, we make those surveys really brief. And I think we could always enhance our wording. And we got some great feedback from teens. I think for our next study, which is the big one I just described, where we will really be scaling this up in a larger sample.
Right. Because I know you mentioned that in the limitations piece where you talked about the small sample size.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So yeah, is this a study that you would actually try to conduct again, but, you know, maybe with a larger sample size, or a different population?
Yeah, I think both. The most proximal next step is a larger sample. So this study provided the opportunity to really make sure that we could implement this kind of study design with a clinical population. Obviously, this is a sensitive population. We want to make sure that we have safeguards in place to keep everyone safe while we're doing this. And we feel like we were able to design a protocol to do that, which is great. This sample was about 50 teens. And so we're going to be scaling this up to 600 teens for the upcoming study across these three sites. And we're going to be including a lot of the same questions, the same type of wrist-worn sensors, so that we have more statistical power to answer questions that we weren't able to answer in this first study. So for instance, at this study, we looked at how sleep problems relate to suicidal thoughts, but we didn't have enough power to look at how these sleep problems may relate, for instance, to suicidal behavior that may have occurred over this period of time, which is a really important question, so that we can really understand how this risk factor is linked to suicidal behavior for clinical reasons. And we'll be able to do that with a larger sample in the upcoming study.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Glenn. I appreciate you highlighting as far as just the various projects that you have and your recent paper. How has your research evolved?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say that, so I started studying self-injury. So non-suicidal forms of self-injury, like cutting and burning, these behaviors that may be engaged in for a number of reasons, most commonly is emotion regulation, but not for suicidal reasons. And so that was about 15 years ago, and then started to branch more into understanding suicide risk for young people. And that has gotten sort of more acute in terms of the populations sort of most in need that we know the least about. So I would say that that's one way that I think things have evolved over time. I think also in terms of how things have evolved over time is really starting to focus energies and time on the projects that I think are going to lead to the most, the results that I think are going to be most helpful for teens now. What are the questions that we can ask that will give us findings, and always thinking forward about dissemination. And with that goal in mind, not just the dissemination piece, but really answering questions that are going to be helpful right now, is building projects that have a sort of a team science approach, that our work is very collaborative. So I mentioned at the outset, we have clinical partners at CHKD, and the study that we're starting up is multi-site. It has colleagues and collaborators at multiple sites, so that we can really address these complex and really important public health concerns that aim to help to improve the lives of young people on a faster time scale. So I think over time, my research has sort of evolved in really trying to focus on who can we collaborate with, what kind of teams can we build in order to answer these questions.
Thank you so much. Now I have one more question for you before we get to as far as just some contact information about you. But my last question, because the Center for Faculty Development, we are definitely about pedagogy as well. So can you provide us with a quick tip, strategy, or best practice that has been successful with your students at Old Dominion University?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. So I think in the spirit, almost sort of bridging off what I just mentioned about dissemination, is I think I'm constantly striving to, in my courses, to disseminate and to bring science to students in a way that they can apply in their daily lives, which is nice in psychology that we're able to do that. Mm-hmm. And so one example, I guess, of that is, I teach abnormal psychology, which is an introduction to clinical psychology. And when I came to ODU, I really wanted to adapt a prior course that I had in a way that students could relate, that they could take some of the skills and the science about things that they're learning and apply it in their own lives. And so in collaboration, in our conversations, Tamika, when I first started, put together a whole series of mental wellness modules where students can take what we know about science related to mental health and ways to improve well-being and apply it in their daily lives. They have a whole module that focuses on sleep, which is directly related to my research. How can they improve their quality of sleep and what impact do they see on their mental and physical health? They learn about the benefits of mindfulness and practice employing different strategies in their day-to-day life, and gratitude, how they experience and express gratitude to other people and the impact that that has on them mentally and physically.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Cassie Glenn. I just want to say thank you for the critical work that you do as well as your research. And I appreciate your passion and just appreciate you for the stuff that you do for our students here at Old Dominion University. So I know you mentioned where the Youth Risk and Resilience or the WIRE2 lab is located, but can you give us that information again, as well as where are you located on campus?
Sure. My office and the WIRE Squared Lab are located in the Mills Godwin building on the ODU campus. So my office is on the first floor. I'm in room 134B on the first floor of that building. And then my lab is on the third floor of that building, room 328. So that's where you can find us. And then you can also find us online. Our website currently is yr2lab.com. So you can find us online there as well.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Well, I want to thank you again. I loved hearing you talk about your research, your projects, the Youth Risk and Resilience Lab, and just thank you. And with you being the first person, I think this went well. You gave us a lot. And so it's appreciated. So I know you're busy and I'm going to let you go. So have a great day.
Thanks so much for having me.
Take care.
Bye-bye.